Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. From the dawn of humanity, people have gone missing without a trace. It seems stories of people leaving their home and never returning are more common than we all like to think. In 2020, it is actually quite common for people to up and vanish with little to no detail as to what had happened. The sheer number of unsolved cold cases around the United States alone is unfathomable. Today, I will be covering three more cold cases that remain unsolved in the hopes that we may be able to reach someone who knows something that can help progress these investigations. If you have a case that you would like to suggest, be sure to comment them down below. If you have information or just want to suggest a case anonymously, be sure to submit that at swampdweller.net. Number 1. What happened to Carol DeArmond? Troy, Michigan is a fairly sizable town, hosting roughly 85,000 people as of 2018. Troy is often known as one of the safest cities within Michigan. Despite this reputation, though, tragedy would strike it. And it would strike a prominent Michigan family. This would be none other than the Kresh family, who founded Kmart. If you aren't familiar, Kmart is a retail store that sells various items, not much different than Walmart or Target. Carol is the granddaughter of S.S. Kresh, the founder of Kmart, as I mentioned before. Carol at the time was in Troy, Michigan, visiting her boyfriend. It was October 26, 1983, and Carol had been seen sometime between 11 and 11:45, leaving said boyfriend's apartment. She was seen driving home and, well, was never heard from again. Carol's 1981 Buick was found at her home parked in the driveway. Oddly, though, the keys were still in the ignition, and her glasses and purse were in her front seat. Even more strange, Carol left no note or message for her children, which she apparently would always do. All of her clothes and belongings were seemingly all left behind. It appeared no money was stolen. Her valuables seemed to be left alone as well. Very odd indeed. Carol was currently undergoing a divorce with her then-husband, Donald. According to the Charlie Project profile on this case, Donald was a volatile man who constantly caused bitter arguments. Donald was 21 years older than Carol. He was allegedly incredibly controlling, according to two close friends of Carol's. He would not allow her to make her own friends or choose her own activities. It is clear why Carol wanted out. To make things even worse, Carol had been telling friends that Donald had been abusing her. She was afraid for her well-being and didn't think Donald would stop. From the court documents, Carol had claimed Donald had punched her in the face and neck, even forced sex upon her without consent. This next bit I am unsure if we can confirm, but was also included in these case files on the Charlie Project website. Apparently, Carol had found a sweatshirt with a combat knife, a hunting knife, and a machete wrapped within it. We are going to go a bit further into Carol and her husband's history for a moment. There were 6 police reports on file for Carol and her husband. To note, None of them note an attack, though, which seems a bit inconsistent with the court documents. Not to say it didn't happen, though, as she could have been easily coerced into going with it. Carol also filed 3 complaints about Donald apparently keeping tabs on her phone. She was confident he was recording her calls to use against her in the custody battle for their kids. Carol's mother was on record saying that violence was in the relationship. It wasn't quite as bad as Carol may have made it seem, though. Of course, there are 3 sides to this story. Her side, his side, and the truth. When Carol disappeared, she was still living in the same home as her husband. Donald claims they stayed away from each other for the most part, though. He went so far as to say he hadn't even seen her since October 19th, about a week before she disappeared. Donald was court-ordered to not enter the study in the home, since that was the room Carol would be using for a bedroom for the time being. As said before, though, Carol would vanish without a trace and has never been heard from again. This case, until this day, remains unsolved. Not to say police haven't worked hard to solve this, though. Blood matching Carol's blood type was found on a couch in her home, as well as the trunk of Donald's 1978 Mercedes. He was and remains the main suspect in this case. Sadly, though, Donald would die of cancer in 1986. The lead investigator for Carol's case would visit Donald at his bedside, but sadly, he refused to speak and passed away, never sharing what he knew about this case. This was the final nail in the coffin for this investigation. With the prime suspect gone and Carol missing, we may never fully solve this one. Carol's family and friends said she was very stressed about the divorce, but they don't think she would have just walked out on her life and leave her kids behind. In 1993, Carol was declared legally dead, and with that, the story of what happened to Carol DeArmond ends. For now. Number 2. The Night Marie Empress Vanished. This is a case I had only briefly heard about before. I can't be certain, but I'm pretty sure I learned about this case from an old television series. I was reminded of it again recently on a true crime blog via Reddit. Marie Empress was a silent film actress from Birmingham, England. She was born in 1884 under the name Marianne Taylor. She had begun her acting career on the British vaudeville stage in the early 1900s before becoming a silent film star. She often played vamps. Marie would book a room on the cruise RMS Orduna, which departed from Liverpool on October 16, 1919. The ship made a few stops during the journey, one being Halifax, Nova Scotia. Then the cruise continued on to New York. When arriving in New York, though, Marie Empress was seemingly nowhere to be found. All her belongings were still in her room, and apparently none of the 1,000-plus passengers saw her or knew of her whereabouts. According to a stewardess on the last night at sea, she brought Marie's dinner to her and later came back to collect the dishes at around 6:30 p.m. At that time, Marie asked for some sandwiches to be brought at 9:30 p.m. Now, I don't find it strange to order a small snack for a meal before bed, but I do find it odd that she would order multiple sandwiches if she was going to be alone. Later that evening, the stewardess returned with Marie's requested sandwiches, but she was not there, so she left the food on the table and went on her way. When she came back the next morning to check on Marie, though, she was not there, and her food was untouched. The bed had also not been slept in, and it is believed Marie went missing between 6:30 and 9:30 p.m. on the evening of the 26th of October. Theories as to what happened to Marie Empress have varied. One of the most popular theories is that Marie jumped off the boat at some point. The problem with this, though, is that the porthole in her room would be much too small to squeeze through, and also, no one saw Marie anywhere on the ship. With as many people as there were on this ship, it would be nearly impossible to not notice someone jumping off the boat. But that doesn't mean it didn't go unnoticed. She would have had to travel through many corridors and rooms full of people, and as mentioned before, not a single person saw her, or at least no one is speaking up. Another theory that was spun up by the press is that Marie was simply doing this for publicity, which would have been all well and good if she hadn't left all of her valuables and essentials behind. And of course, she never returned. So we can obviously rule out publicity. The media didn't spin these stories out of anything though. There are reports of her doing publicity stunts before during her career. However, no one ever claimed her belongings. Sadly, none of Marie Empress's films are available to view online. Not much of anything has survived from her career outside of some news clippings, and most of them have to do with her disappearance. Marie Empress's story is still unsolved, from her background to her disappearance. She is shrouded in mystery. Number 3. The Strange Disappearance of Branson Perry. This is one of those strange cases that nags at my brain. One of those cases I seemingly can't stop thinking about, even after work is done for the day. One of the first unsolved mysteries I have ever covered on this channel was the unsolved death of Ken McElroy and the vigilante town of Skidmore. Well, this is a more recent unsolved case from that area. This time, instead of a town coming together to get rid of a bad man, a seemingly normal and innocent man would go missing. It was April 7th, 2001. And Branson Perry had planned on hanging out with a girl he had invited over. This girl's name was Gina. Branson's home was located at 304 West Oak Street in Skidmore, Missouri. He had invited Gina over to help him clean up the house before his father, Bob Perry, came home from the hospital. There were two other men outside at the time, who, for some reason, have remained unnamed. These two unknown men were apparently working on Bob's cars, which needed its alternator replaced. At this time, I am honestly confused about how we wouldn't at least have an alias or something for the two people you trust enough to work on your car freely. According to Gina, she saw Branson grab something from a cabinet in the kitchen. He then ran through the house and out the back door. It sounds a bit odd, but could be explained away by rational means. He later returned, and she asked what he was doing. He refused to say anything and acted like nothing ever happened. Gina shrugged it off and took a shower. After coming out, she noticed that one of the men from outside were inside looking through the cabinets. She asked him what he was looking for. The man replied and said nothing and quickly left. Sometime around 3 p.m., Gina said she was upstairs when she heard the front door open and close. When she checked who it was, she saw Branson leaving the house, going towards the shed where the two men had been. He had a pair of jumper cables in his hands. After the sighting though, Branson Perry has never been heard from again. This isn't where the story ends though. Oh no. This story gets much, much more confusing real quick. A little less than a week later, Branson's grandmother, Joanne, stopped by his house and found that the door was unlocked and no one was home. She noted that the radio was still on, and she thought this was rather unusual, but not entirely a cause for concern. Over the next few days, she would attempt to call Branson, but was not receiving an answer. She once again went over to the house and found it empty. Growing more concerned, she called Branson's mother, Rebecca Clino, who also said she had not heard from her son in quite a bit. Once Bob was released from the hospital, they filed a missing person report on April 17th. Search parties were put together by Nottoway County Police. They initially searched within a 15-mile radius of Branson's home. They searched for multiple fields, farms, and local abandoned buildings. But no matter how many stones they turned over, they could not find any trace of Branson Perry anywhere. Police could not locate the alleged jumper cables he was said to be bringing to the men. Oddly though, 2 weeks after the initial search, the cables were found on the ground outside of the shed, like someone had placed them there. Following months included endless searching, over 100 interviews with different people, and much more were relentless in the town of Skidmore. After an interview with local police, Gina claimed Branton had been experimenting with marijuana and amphetamines. A family member seemingly confirmed this by stating he had a bottle of Valium on him when he disappeared. Many acquaintances of Branton were interviewed about his drug use and sales. Not much would come from this, though, and nothing solid connected him to drug sales. There were a few rumors that he owed money to some drug dealers, but nothing that can be substantiated. This next part is honestly one of the more tragic details of this case. 4 days before Branton would vanish, he visited his neighbor Jason Bierman and was allegedly drugged without consent. While drugged, Branton lost control of his action and was pushed into sex with Jason. Branton had confessed this to his father, who had known his son was gay. He believed Branton had been active before with men, but mentioned this incident really bothered his son. At first, Bob thought his son simply skipped town to Kansas City for a while to be with friends and to get away from this bad experience. Jack Wayne Rogers is a convicted felon with many horrid charges, mainly extreme violence against gay men, trans females, and children. During an investigation into Jack Rogers in 2003, officials found massive amounts of lewd images of children on his computer, along with various blog posts under weird usernames like Boogerbutt and Oh Hail Satan, and more. These posts described insanely graphic details of the torture he had inflicted on multiple men. In one of these posts, Rogers claims he cannibalized genitals he castrated. They only get worse from there, and for the sake of all of us and YouTube not smiting this video out of existence, I will leave info in the description for you to do further research. And an additional 30 for the child images. At this court hearing, he claimed he knew nothing about Branton's case, even though it seemed he was a solid match potentially. Branton's mother, though, does not think Rogers took her son. Here is a statement she made. "The police are not completely ruling him out, but now the investigation has turned towards Skidmore again. They have received new leads there. I suppose the time has a way of unraveling secrets. I believe someone in the area knows what happened to Branton. In my heart, I don't believe this suspect is responsible. Despite the nightmare I lived through at this sentencing, I am thankful that someone with that much evil will never walk the streets again." Sadly, Bob passed away in 2004, never knowing what happened to his son. Officials revealed they were excavating a site in Quitman, Missouri, after a credible tip was called in that Branton's remains would be located there. For 2 days, they dug 23 feet deep and 40 feet wide, looking for any sign of remains. Nothing was found, though. In 2010, Branton's mother offered a $20,000 reward for any information leading to the location of her son. In 2011, Rebecca Clino would pass away from melanoma. She continued searching for her son until the very end. Monica Kaysen, a close friend and founder of the Center for Missing Persons, promised they would continue to search for him in her honor. One last note to add before this story is fully told. Branton Perry's cousin, 23-year-old Bobby Joe Stinnette, was found murdered in an extremely brutal fashion just 3 years later. She was 8 months pregnant at the time. She had been strangled and later cut open the womb and removed the child. 36-year-old Lisa M. Montgomery was later charged and convicted for this act. It is unclear if this had anything to do with Branton and his disappearance. I just felt it was another strange tragedy in a small town connected so close to this case. The story of what happened to Branton Perry remains unsolved. Thanks for watching this video. I know these cases are truly sad, and can be frustrating to know they may never be solved. But with this series, I am hoping to shed light on lesser-known cases that deserve more coverage. It is my hope that someone watching these videos may have some sort of information that can help progress these investigations. If you enjoyed this video, please hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. The more likes this gets, the more YouTube promotes it to fresh new faces. If you're new to the Swamp, why not join us and subscribe? Turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day on all things natural and supernatural. If you're not aware, you can download your favorite scary stories from the Swamp on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about every other major podcast provider. If you would like to submit an unsolved mystery or have a scary story of your own to share, submit that at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.